Welcome to the Nerd Party.
To the past, or to the future, to an age when thought is free, from the age of Big Brother, from the age of the thought police, from a dead man.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. Here I am joined by Mr. Brandon Kendrick.
What up?
And Mrs. Lindsay Kendrick.
Hey.
Hey, hey, hey. So we're here. This is probably the happiest we're going to be during this episode because the movie we're watching is, it's a doozy. It's a fun Friday night film. We're watching 1984, which... I have been avoiding for a good chunk of my life because I love the book 1984. It's one of my favorites. If I were to make like a top 10 list of my favorite books, 1984 would actually probably be in my top five. So let's cut that down to five and say 1984 is in that. So I've been very reluctant to watch this movie mainly because of that. So have you two seen 1984 or read it, or where do you stand on this?
I've never seen the movie and I've never like really read the book. I think I was in high school and I never had to read it in high school. But I chose in my leisure to try and read it. So I checked it out from the public library. But I guess I just wasn't in the mood at that time. Cause I just couldn't really get into it, but I've wanted to go back and read it since then. I mean, it's in there with my favorite genre of books. I love
books that make you very sad.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, I love Fahrenheit 451. I love Brave New World. So it's definitely one that
it's like dystopian, depressing. Yeah. Hate your life.
I mean, it is my life. So
right now, yes. So we're just a little timely, I think, with this one. But Lindsay, what's your relationship to 1984? Do you have it? Were you born in 1984? Is there any kind of connection that you have to 1984?
Nope. I was born in 1986.
Okay.
But I'm in the same boat as Brandon. I have not seen the film. I, weirdly enough, have not read the book. I majored in English and I studied education as well. And I have never been made to read it. I've been interested in it, but there are just so many books in the world that it's hard to know where to start when you're trying to catch up on the ones that you skipped over.
That is true.
I mean, I haven't even read Fahrenheit 451 or Brave New World. And I talk like love dystopian. And then I'm like, what dystopian have I read?
You need to
But
leave.
I have read Animal Farm, unlike some people.
Yeah, I haven't read that.
Ninth grade, okay?
Stop looking at me.
Okay. But it's definitely my thing. I mean, I do like, I like sort of... realistically depressing sort of. I mean, The Bell Jar is one of my favorite books. So.
I see. I've never read that. So I, at the very least, I can be whatever, beheaded for not reading that. I don't know what that means, but
it's you know, the genre would be psychologically damaging.
Okay. That's right? Definitely a good description for this book. And I'm kind of nervous about you two. This is your introduction to 1984 because I can't vouch for this movie. This is the first episode, I think, since Gremlins where none of the hosts have actually seen this movie. So no one's vouching for this. This could be a disaster. And I really hope it's not. I hear it's decent. It has an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is good. It doesn't have that many reviews, but they all seem to slant positive, which gives me hope. So that's what I hope. This is at least a good representation of the book so that it won't make you too hate yourself, at least in the wrong way. This movie, I think the story is technically supposed to make you hate yourself, but hopefully it does it in the right way.
Yeah. Well, Roger Ebert is my fave, and he gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars.
Right.
And what was the quote? It penetrates much more deeply into the novel's heart of darkness than previous adaptations, which, I mean, we haven't seen either, but I do.
Wasn't there only one other adaptation? I think it was, there was something in 1956, which literally I was looking for information about it. And other than like just the cast and crew, there's like no information whatsoever. So clearly it wasn't worth watching. So Michael Radford is the director. He wrote the movie as well. He directed other movies like Another Time, Another Place, The Merchant of Venice, Flawless.
all classics?
All very question mark? Popular movies, I think. I don't know. I couldn't, like, there was nothing else that he'd done that was recognizable to me. So I don't know where this, I'm kind of still, like, trepidatious about this movie. But I was really excited when I found out that it was shot by Roger Deakins. And for those of you who don't know, Roger Deakins is arguably the best living goat cinematographer.
Goat.
He's the best goat.
Greatest of all time.
Oh, there you go. I thought you were just saying he was a goat. And I was like, well, maybe he is. I mean, who knows? I've never met the man. He could just be a goat. But first of all, he's never won an Oscar, which is just a travesty.
Crime against humanity.
It is a crime against humanity. But he's done movies. He's done, like, almost all of the Coen brothers movies, Fargo, No Country for Old Men, The Big Lebowski. Recently, he's done Skyfall, which is probably the best looking Bond movie ever. And Blade Runner 2049. Is that coming out this year or next year?
I can't remember.
He also did Sicario. He's amazing. So that made me, like, super excited because I was really nervous. I have such an image of this novel in my head. I've read it so many times and I love it so much that I was very, like, nervous about, oh, what's this going to look like? And then that kind of reassured me. So I'm very excited about that. Another really cool thing about this is that, you know, the movie was released in 1984, you know, because the producers were geniuses and were like, guys, we have to make the movie 1984 in 1984. And they did it. But what's really cool is they actually, like, there's a scene in the movie where Winston is writing in his diary a very specific date. And it's April 4th, 1984. And apparently they actually shot that scene on April 4th, 1984. So it's really cool that they actually devoted the time, any production, to actually say it's really important that we do this with all the other things going on in a film shoot. For them to actually be like, we want to be that authentic, is kind of amazing. So kudos to them. There's a lot of good signs about this movie that are making me very like, oh, I hope it's good. I have a lot of hope for it. This film is also Richard Burton's last appearance. Now, Richard Burton, this is where I lose any film cred. I know the name Richard Burton, but I'm looking at, like, the list of movies that he was in, and I have no clue. Like, I don't think he was in, like, Hamlet, and this is, like, all in the 50s and 60s. Hamlet, Night of the Iguana, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which I've also heard of. He was in an adaptation of The Taming of the Shrew. I know his name.
I don't think
I've ever seen him in anything.
You're doing better than me because I didn't know the name until today. So.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds familiar to me, but it's one of those things where I would just nod my head and pretend that I knew.
Oh, yeah, that guy. He's phenomenal. Yeah.
It's a very...
I know those films, but I just don't know who he would...
Right. Well, we're about to know who he is. This was actually his last film, I believe, and the movie is dedicated to him. But, yeah, it's... Like I said, this is one of my favorite books. Have you found yourself in a situation where, like, there was a book that you absolutely loved and you knew it was going to be made into a movie and you were just almost like, you almost boycotted it just because, not because you didn't want to see it, but because you were so nervous about seeing it? I think that's kind of what happened with me in this movie, and now I'm just forcing myself to watch it. But is there anything you can think of, like, recently that where that happened?
Well, for me, a lot of the examples that I can think of are more where I knew the movie was being made, so I made a point to go read the book.
Uh-huh.
And I think the most recent example of being let down with that
I know it.
What is it, Lindsay?
Is it The Martian?
Oh, yeah. Hey, yes. What's up, Ridley Scott?
You didn't like The Martian?
Suck it, Matt Damon.
Wait, let's talk about this a little bit, because I like The Martian. I like the book, and I like the movie.
Okay, I like the movie well enough,
okay,
but I thought it was kind of garbage.
Okay.
Next to
the, I like the movie, but it's garbage.
Well, it's mainly the ending. I thought the ending of the Martian movie was really bad.
Okay.
I thought they made a really poor change.
Just the very ending? Are we
basically
talking about?
Okay. Yeah.
Without spoiling it for anyone.
Yeah, I still recommend reading the book because the ending is very different, and I thought the book's ending was a lot better.
I would agree with The Martian. I didn't think that the whole movie was terrible, and I think that if I hadn't read the book, I don't think I would have had a negative reaction to it at all.
Same.
But because I read the book, I think that they cut out a really big, almost climactic part towards the end.
Uh-huh.
And then they added in something really goofy. And I'm someone who has a hard time comprehending a lot of math and science. And what I loved about that book is that it made me understand more than I thought I could, and I had a lot of fun right. doing it. And it felt like it was so grounded in a lot of realism. So I think that they stretched it a little too far in the film.
Okay.
The only other ones I can think of off the top of my head are The Lovely Bones.
Okay.
I love the book. When I heard, I was kind of excited for the movie.
Right, because this is when, like, Peter Jackson was still on everyone's good
side. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
He just made Lord of the Rings. He made King Kong, which wasn't great, but it was like not a bad movie by any means. I think Lovely Bones was like his turning point.
Right, and then I heard terrible things and I didn't see it because of that, because I just didn't, I really, really liked the book.
Yeah.
And I read that, it was either, I think it might have even been in high school, either high school or college. And then, I mean, the obvious is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I wasn't apprehensive because I actually started seeing the films before I started reading the books.
Right.
I saw the first two films and they convinced me to start reading the books. And then I fell so in love with the books that I got really apprehensive about the movies as the books got longer, and I knew they would have to cut more and more plot, like more and more essential plot, that the only way I could make sure I completely enjoyed them without worrying was to see the Harry Potter films, and really any film that's based off of a book, as a companion piece and not a replacement. So you should read it as well, but then you can enjoy the movie and it doesn't matter if they've changed things or sort of messed around with things because you've read it, so you know.
And with Harry Potter, at least in my opinion, the movies were so good that I was like, these stand alone as like good movies that I can enjoy on their own terms, and then the books are amazing.
I agree with that completely.
Yeah, and it's like, it's kind of the same thing, in terms of an adaptation that I was nervous about that I read, I'm a huge Ender's Game fan and I avoided the movie for a long time, and I finally watched it and it was terrible, just like I feared it would be. It's a tough thing, and there are very few movies where you could really say just stand on their own terms. I think Lord of the Rings does a really good job.
Yes.
The Godfather.
I mean, the same with a lot of Jane Austen books turned to movies. There are some that are better than others. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are good, they do have to cut some material out, but they hold on to the essence of the story and the important plot points and the character personalities. Because every film that's based off of a book is that director's and that those filmmakers' interpretation of the book. So it's like literary criticism on the screen.
Exactly. And I think as long as you, and what those movies did really well, if you maintain the essence of the story that you're telling and you respect the material, then it's going to turn out well for you. And if you don't, you get the Hobbit trilogy, and that, we all know how that turned out. All right. Well, so how are we feeling about 1984? I already said I'm kind of nervous. How do you two feel about it? How are you excited? Do you kind of wish you'd read the book first, or are you looking forward to like watching the movie?
I kind of wish I had read the book first, I think if I at least like the movie enough, it'll give me the overview of the book, and it might motivate me to finally go back and read it at the very least. I do like John Hurt, and so I'm interested in seeing him when he was a little bit younger, because I don't think I've really seen anything other than when he's
old. What about Alien? When an alien bursts out of his chest, spoiler alert.
I forgot about that. But I'm most familiar with him as Ollivander and V for Vendetta and that kind of stuff.
Which is funny that you bring up V for Vendetta, because he's basically playing the big brother character in that movie, which is clearly a reference to the movie 1984.
And I set that up for you and you slammed it home.
Oh, yes. That's what it is. That's what it is. Stop rubbing my leg. No. All right. So like kind of excited, but wish you'd read the book as well. It'll be cool, though, to see like how you react to it versus how I react to it, and if our reactions kind of mesh up, or if because I like the book or whatever, vice versa. But I know one thing, we're all going to be really happy at the end of this movie. We're going to be so thrilled. It'll be sunshine and daisies, and we're going to come back and we're not going to be depressed at all.
No,
it's going to be great. So just you wait, we'll be back soon.
Now available to own on video cassette.
All right. We just watched 1984, and we're sufficiently depressed, all of us, I think, not just because the movie is extremely depressing, but this is absolutely insane. While we were watching the movie, literally in like the last 10 minutes, we read the news that John Hurt just passed away.
Just passed away.
Literally while we were watching 1984.
Yep. What is this, real life?
This is real life, Brandon. So now the past three Missing Frames episodes, including this one, are dedicated to our fallen comrades. We had David Bowie last episode and Carrie Fisher the previous episode. Maybe we should just end Missing Frames right now before we cause the deaths of other amazing actors that we love.
I'm this sorry, John Hurt.
This is terrible. But in all seriousness, our thoughts are with him and his family and everyone. God, that is insane. I can't believe we want. It's like as if we couldn't be sad enough that had to happen. So like, I don't even know. I can't think straight. But let's try to.
I feel like I need one of the razor blades from the movie right now.
I mean, I'm glad we got to at the very least honor his memory by watching a really great performance of his, and he really was the best part of the movie, along with the visuals were really about what I would expect from Roger Deakins. So let's talk about what we thought. As a fan of 1984, this movie did live up to my expectations. I really enjoyed it visually, and I really liked the performances a lot. I was able to fill in a lot of the information gaps just because I know the book really well, but it occurred to me very early on that I was like, oh, we're kind of skimming over a lot of details. And at first I thought they were doing it in a very like subtle way, like it was going to unfold naturally. And then they just kind of kept going and didn't really fill any blanks.
Yeah, that I kept kind of waiting for that to happen. Yeah. I agree with everything you just said. I think the second half kind of stands better because I feel like at that point it's kind of all focusing on Winston, really, yeah. And you have all the information that you really need about him at that point. I was a little lost at times in the first half, just like obviously I know the world of 1984, but I don't know enough details. I feel like there was a lot of information left out that would have helped make the whole world make a little bit more sense. And yeah. Now it's like I absolutely have to go back and read it because I need to know that.
At the very least, this movie is, even though, like you're saying, there's a lot of information clearly not being conveyed in a way that's satisfactory to somebody who doesn't know anything about the book, it's not a bad movie. It's like it's well made. It's a decent movie. It definitely doesn't pull you completely in. Did you feel that too, Lindsay?
Yes, I kind of agree with what both of you are saying. I think it did start to pull me in where I started to feel, well, at the very beginning, I know I was definitely disturbed because I didn't know what was happening, mm-hmm. but just it was like one of those rally things and everybody was like very passionately screaming for like the emotion was just pure like anger and bile.
Yeah. And they didn't really explain what that was. So,
and I don't know if they had to act that way or they were really moved to act that way. It wasn't clear, but it really threw me off and kind of disturbed me and like felt very unsettling.
Right.
And then I felt emotionally moved probably towards the second half when the whole torture scene was was taking place, because it just the fingers, you know, how many fingers am I holding up,
right.
and all that. That was that really sucked me in. Yeah. It was like, even though not a lot was happening, I think that was the scene that had me engaged the most.
Yeah. And so the problem with the movie is that, well, the difference, and this is the case with a lot of adaptations, and really successful film adaptations do this very well, where they give you the essential information and then kind of like you are totally on board. 1984 is tough because the book itself is essentially kind of an explanation of what the world is like. Like for the majority of the book and a lot of what we saw in the movie, like the first half is very internal. He's going about his life. You know, he has interactions. We get the feel like certain acts are forbidden. You know, love is forbidden, things like that. But because the book takes place from like a third person limited perspective, like it's basically from his perspective, kind of everything that's happening, he's able to interpret things, and we're kind of privy to his thought process, and he kind of goes through all the information. Here's why this is the way it is. Here's why this is the way it is. One of the most incredible things about the book is just how like real the world feels and mm-hmm. how like disturbing it is. And the movie visually, like you get that sense of kind of that dread. And I mean, it's grungy, it's gray. And of course, I mean, Roger Deakins, as we were saying, did the cinematography and it looks amazing, but you don't get the sense of like the substance of the world. Like you connect to it visually, yeah. but there's not a lot.
It almost seems like yeah. a caricature of like a dystopian world.
Right.
Like just kind of taken to its core, but then exaggerated a bit.
Exactly.
And that's kind of what it felt like in 1984. Yeah.
It was like the episode of Black Mirror that I was talking about, where was it the second episode of the first season where it's like they all have to run on treadmills, or is it pedal and bicycles?
Yeah, pedal bicycle.
For like money. And it's like, I get that that's how the world was, but because it is a TV show and it's only so long, they didn't explain why the world the way it was the way it was. And I really right. wanted to know that, even though that I guess wasn't important to that story. I really wanted to know why a lot of things were happening.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't yeah. necessary, I like always in world for like world building purposes,
yeah.
like they would help suck me in even more.
Yeah, there were details that I was kind of shocked they left out. And part of me wonders, you know, it feels more like somebody was like, guys, we have to get this release. It's almost 1984. We better make this movie real fast. Because this came out in an era where like there were a ton of dystopian, like legendary dystopian movies coming out. Like we have Brazil by Terry Gilliam. Have you two seen that?
We have not.
Oh, wow. It's very good. Very 1984 inspired, a bit more satirical and goofy, but also with kind of an edge that is disturbing. We also have Blade Runner, Ridley Scott.
Yes.
Which is, you know, amazing. And The Wall. And then they re-released Fritz Lang's Metropolis with the Moroder score. And so a lot of the early 80s was like really focusing and honing in on this stuff. So part of me wonders, how much did 1984 the movie suffer, do you think, from just like this, you know, these movies were coming out and clearly people were like, oh, well, why don't we just make 1984? It feels like other movies took what 1984 did in book form and kind of perfected it. So it's like, what else is there left for the movie 1984 to do?
Yeah, I think that kind of comes across, and it seems like they're focusing. I mean, I know Roger Deakins hadn't been around in the game that long
yeah.
yet, but I feel like let's get a guy and let's make this pretty.
Yeah.
And it kind of loses some of its substance in a way.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, the second half, like the scene that Lindsay alluded to in particular with the five fingers, that I think is the most like emotionally kind of devastating scene mm-hmm. in the whole movie. But it just kind of felt like, here's the movie and then let's yeah. Let's make it a little almost pretentious for 1980 for the, you know, the time
right.
that it came out in.
Yeah, I was very concerned of how the movie would feel. Like, it felt like the book. Like, it felt like it, as far as, like, it was kind of hypnotizing, very, like, strange and off-putting, and you're drawn in by the visuals, but like you're saying, it lacks information. Like, you were just talking about, Lindsay, the beginning of the movie starts with them screaming at the screen with no context at all. You're just like, these people are really angry. What that scene is they are, it's called like, I think, I can't remember what the length of time is, but it's like the 10 minutes of hate or something like that, where basically they gather up all the party members for like their break and display images of Goldstein, the party's enemy, like the head of the resistance. And they just have them like scream and hate and yell. Wait. And then they show Big Brother and play soothing music. And everyone's like, yes, we love him.
So that face is, that wasn't even clear to me the entire movie.
The face that's showing up on all the screens
the
in the
mustache.
Movie, that's Big Brother.
Okay, so I was right.
And
okay.
I don't think they ever say Big Brother in the movie.
They do.
No, they do.
But okay.
Not until closer to the end.
Yeah,
when they said,
I realized
Big Brother.
That. Yeah, he says it at the end when Winston is being tortured,
yeah.
but they never mention Big Brother at all. So you don't really, I was wondering, how, because the book doesn't start off with that scene. I was wondering how it was going to unfold. I was like, oh, they'll probably explain this later on, but they never really do. And then the movie kind of continues to assume you know what's happening.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take that leap where somebody watching the film as a single narrative, like on its own terms, would be able to understand anything.
Yep.
Like, were there,
can confirm.
Yeah. Well, were there any other instances, like anything, because this is exciting, I definitely want to talk about it. Are there any other instances you can think of where you're like, what is this? What's happening? Like, I don't even know.
One for sure. Like, okay. While I picked up on the fact that Winston was basically helping create the propaganda,
right,
editing the newspapers and things like that. So one thing that I didn't get was where exactly was the original paper coming from that he changed? Like,
I wanted to know that.
The version, like we discussed briefly while we were watching, where they were changing the chocolate rations.
Yeah.
And he edited, or what it originally said was that it was being decreased, I think.
Yeah, original headline was chocolate ration shortage, and he changes it to, we have way more than we ever thought.
So, like, was it just like, this is the first draft of the propaganda? Or
so, what
like-
it was is, so what his job is he basically takes, like, past articles or things that have existed, news that has existed, and the party will, on a whim, decide, oh, we're not at war with these people, we're at war with these people. Or the party on a whim will say, we have a chocolate shortage, just for whatever reason it will benefit them, and then they change their mind and they're like, actually, we don't, we have this. So his job is to go back through and find any inconsistencies and get rid of them.
So he gets
access to every, like, all the materials that are contradicting what the party is saying is the fact. Basically, he's inventing whatever the party says goes. So not too dissimilar from certain things that are happening in our day and age.
Yes.
But that's basically what his job is. The idea is if the party controls information, if they control the past, they control the present and the future. So his job is basically to reinforce that. They just make things up. They decide what the facts are. And he changes if there's any, like, for instance, and they didn't explain this well. Again, something the movie did not explain well. There are a lot of instances where he'll, like, switch out one person's picture for another. It's basically like an esteemed party member has done something offensive, and what he'll do is he'll switch that with somebody else, like a terrible person. And so the party member will be a war hero who sacrificed his life, and then the terrible person will be the one who committed the treasonous act. So it makes the party look good.
Right.
They showed something like that. I don't know if it was somebody who committed a treasonous act, but it was like somebody had died, or
yeah,
was it somebody who had died a hero, and he, like, covered up the face to, like, right, switch it to be a different person?
Exactly. That was, yeah, that's the example I was, okay, using. He basically, that was essentially,
oh,
his job.
Okay.
But yeah, the movie never clearly explained that.
Yeah,
it never clearly explains, like, you see him crossing things out and you see him replacing stuff. I was afraid this movie would be a little too explicit, like a little too, well, here's how things work here. So I was very
too
happy.
Obvious.
Yeah, I was a little, I thought it was gonna be a little too, like, overbearing with, like, the dystopian stuff. And it was actually really subtle and subtexty, which I liked a lot, until I started to realize, oh, it's all subtext and you're not going to tell us anything.
Yeah, I feel like they were probably afraid of doing that. And
exactly. So
they steered a little too hard to the other side. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really like the mood and the style. And I don't know if any of that would have been taken away had they just laid everything out. Because one thing that I actually really do hate in movies is when they just straight up tell you everything, yeah, like you're a dummy. And I don't know if they either thought, well, everyone's read 1984, we don't need to do this, or they didn't want to be too obvious, because, like, there's a couple movies that...
Can you give me an example of a movie that you don't like because it you feel like it over-explains?
Yeah. I can think of one off the top of my head.
I can certainly do it.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and everyone's going to hate me, but Inception.
Oh,
I thought it was... It's a heist movie, and it's in someone's dream. I get it. you don't need to tell me how like basic dreams work. I understand what lucid dreaming is. Uh-huh. I'm not 10. You don't have to sit there and like all they needed to do to make it even worse was to look straight at the camera and explain it. They invented conversations just to explain every little detail to us. And I felt like I was being treated like an idiot.
Nolan's dialogue can be a little clunky. I know.
I love Nolan. I just don't like Inception.
Pretty much anyone who listens to this is probably a Nolan fan. I know all the other nerd partiers are.
We all love
you'll have
him.
To forgive me, but it's true. His dialogue's a little clunky. You're going to have to deal with it. He's a great filmmaker, but let's accept that and move on.
Yeah.
But
so visually,
hashtag hot takes.
Yeah.
Well, visually, that movie I thought was amazing. I thought that,
Inception?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought that if they had toned down the dialogue and the screenplay was different,
right.
I
so basically, 1984 needed to be a bit more Inception, and Inception needed to be a little more 1984.
Yes. Bingo. I think so. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, I feel like if I had read. So you didn't have any confusion having read the book because it follows.
No,
it, right?
I was. I mean, the movie is a good. Like we were talking about earlier, it's a good companion piece.
Right.
Like, it's like, I'm happy that I'm not upset. Like, I feel like that, the fact that I watched this and I didn't hate it,
that makes it a
successful endeavor. I'm happy about it. Like, I was fine. But again, it feels less like it was a genuine artistic endeavor and more like somebody realized how cool it would be to release 1984 in 1984 and they rushed it out. I feel like the elements are all there. It's just missing the information and the substance. Like,
a little
I
more
thought,
time on the script.
Yeah, like a little more time. Just like give us more information. I thought it would have been great for them. There's more in the book regarding them like meeting with O'Brien and sitting down with him and him explaining stuff. And there's a whole section in the book devoted to the actual book. Like you can actually read like segments from the book that O'Brien gives Winston.
Yeah, that was the other thing that I didn't understand is like O'Brien gave Winston that book where the pages were hidden.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
yeah, the
right
transition
after that,
was
he's
very
torturing
fast.
Winston.
Exactly. That happened like almost instantly. And in the book, it's more spread out. Like they meet with O'Brien. Like first Winston, I think he talks to O'Brien and then he invites Julia to go with them and they sit down with O'Brien and Brian, and O'Brien's like, here are all the things that the resistance does and you'll never know where we are and you'll never know if you're helping us, but you know, we'll, you know, you'll be helping. I swear, you know, it's, and he gives them the book and you know, again, it's the advantage of novels over film is that they can bombard you with information and you don't feel like you're being inceptioned. You feel like you're basically like, oh great. 1984, George Orwell is a master of that. And this, the whole section of the book where it's like explaining newspeak and double, like the movie never explains any of that. Newspeak and what is it? Double thought or thought police, thought crime. There are all these terms thrown out that I don't think
double
are
plus
ever,
good.
Yeah, double plus good is like a language where the guy,
I don't even remember that.
There's lots of, they drop a lot of terminology, but they don't explain any.
Yeah,
of
it.
And
just,
it's
it
like,
went through my brain because it's like there's no other reference to it. So I just,
and it's
my
like
brain
if the movie
out.
Had anything else working for it, it would be fine. But it's like, it's an adaptation of a book that like is about this information. So because the movie isn't giving us anything else, it is all the more, it's like, yeah, sure, this is cool that I'm seeing this dystopian world play out the way it would without explanation, but it's like this whole book was about the explanation of this world. So without the explanation, you don't know what's going on. But like, did you guys understand what was going on with like the thought police and doublethink? I think that's the right term. I feel like I'm losing my mind, but did you guys get any vibes from that?
Well,
like
I know references to the thought police like for forever, and but I just didn't understand like how do they know when you're committing the crime, like it's thought, right? Like is there, how do
I think the idea is like you I don't know if
is
they
it the cameras
they imply that they can read your mind,
right? Because he said he was lying, and I'm like, how do you know he's lying, dude? Yeah. You don't have him hooked up to a lie detector,
right? I think it's perception. Like they can tell, like, oh, you've committed a thought crime because of the way you walk or the way you like you might
you
react
look like
to
you're
something.
Happy.
Yeah, you look like you're happy or things like that. You
and
know,
I think
and
people can turn you in because then that one guy's kid basically tattled
on
him.
My daughter,
yeah, exactly.
He was like, oh, I'm proud of her. I'm like, you little It's just, it's horrible to think of, like, it's kind of like the Salem witch trials. So yeah. Like, you can just point to someone and say they did it. They
exactly.
committed this crime, and there's but really not much you can do.
The scary thing is the kids believe it. Like, it's like mm-hmm. the idea is this society, this younger generation that's being raised up is raised completely in the party's influence. Whereas Winston knows a world before the party. He kind of has vague memories of it. So he's like, it's kind of implied he's like of the last generation to know a world without Big Brother. Whereas these kids are like fully devoted to the party. So it's
full
kind
on
of
Nazi, Nazi exactly. Hitler or Hitler.
It's super, super disturbing. And they show that actually really well on the scene where they're on the train or the bus. Was it train?
Yeah.
And the kids are singing and they're all dressed up in their like Boy Scout looking uniforms right. and all of the older people, and that's why I said I like that old lady's face, because she did not look amused in the slightest, and like none of the older people did. They just were stone-faced,
right?
And the kids were just like breaking out into this like joyous propaganda
crazy
song.
Creepy song. Yeah. And moments like that worked, like when the movie was focusing on feeling and mood and tone. It was great. Like, it was just moments of him, like, all the moments of him, like, the dreams of Room 101 were really beautiful and, like, hypnotic, very effective. Just everything else in between where it was, like, they just needed more explanation. So another thing the movie doesn't explain really well, because I remember you were kind of like, these two just met each other and now they're, like, doing it. Like, is that just what happened?
Well, he got a note that said, I love you. And I'm like, they've looked at each other once. Like, yeah, right.
He picked her up, helped her up off the ground after she fell. And it's like, I love you now.
Yeah, there's like an announcement about like the anti-sex league. But the movie, again, never really explicitly states like, this is something that's outlawed. And it never really, you never get the idea that why Winston and Julia are like hanging out and banging each other. And it's because they're like, you know, it's their form of rebellion. It's never even like they actually love each other. I think they love each other because of what the other represents to them, which is like this, we're fighting. This is our way of fighting the party and our freedom. And of course the movie doesn't really explain
that.
It's tough.
It's kind of like, I actually was reminded slightly of The Lobster, which we saw
recently. It did
because
give me
it
that
was
vibe
like
too.
You're not supposed to have these like natural like separated relationships, and they did that, and I think that they liked each other more because they were rebelling.
Right. So did you like, so how did that relationship play for you two? Like did you feel kind of any sort of sympathy for them as far as like what they were doing, or did you understand like them in general or why it was happening, or did it just kind of feel like, oh, this is happening?
Lindsay's looking at me, so I guess I'll talk. I mean, I got a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think like it just was like, okay, this is happening. It actually did seem like they cared about each other, like as people more than what they were doing, than probably what the book was going for.
Yeah,
like they seemed a little more intimate than you would think.
There's definitely affection there, but it feels clinical in the book, like it's an act that they're doing, and I think maybe they grow to love each other because it becomes the only thing they have left, especially in the moments where it's like we're going to be taken away. And there's a line, again, in the book it works way better, but she talks about how, they can't control your thoughts. They can't really get inside your head. And then at the end, they do get inside his head, and they make him, like, we won't betray each other. And then he betrays her by saying, just, you know, kill her, do whatever to her, don't do it to me. And they finally gain victory over him by getting him to betray Julia. But again, it's all very muddled in the movie. It's all very, like, you can see it once I point it out because I've read the book. But, like, watching that, did you, like, get any of that just watching the movie?
I mean, I think a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably not as much as I should have.
Right.
From reading the book.
I did think the scene was really effective with the rats, when he was like,
oh, so good.
I was like, oh,
visually,
whoa.
It looked exactly like what I would expect. It very much evoked the book, like visually. But that scene, the torture scene, was great. Great. It was pretty horrible. It was especially horrible that like 5 minutes after the torture scene, we read the news that John Hurt had passed away. So it was like, this is a little weird. But the movie itself was extremely effective in those final scenes.
Yeah, I think some time away from the movie and then reading the book,
yeah,
it'll probably actually make me love the movie.
Yeah, maybe appreciate it more.
Yeah, because and I think it's, if I read it immediately, I don't think that would happen.
Yeah.
Because the movie would be too fresh. And I think if I had read the book first, like you did, I think it's impossible to love the movie.
Right.
To really love the movie.
There's no question. Like, you know, there are movies like we were saying with Lord of the Rings, you could probably get away with never reading those books. I wouldn't recommend it. But the movies are so good that you can, like, watch those and be completely satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
I would even argue that for Harry Potter, even though I think the books are amazing, I think the movies stand alone where you could probably be satisfied and like be like, okay, well, I'm not, I would like to read the books, but I don't have to read them.
You'd be a big dummy though.
Yeah, I agree with that. Same with The Godfather. I've never read The Godfather. It hasn't affected my enjoyment of that wonderful movie. But 1984 is definitely one of those where there's no question where it's like, what should I do? Read the book or watch the movie? It's like, read the book. The book is amazing. But so, Brandon, you're saying you're definitely interested in reading it?
Absolutely.
And Lindsay, how do you feel? Are you interested in picking it up at some point?
Yeah, I was before. And now that I'm extra curious for all the extra information, yeah, I'm definitely
going thing.
To read
it's it. Like, and it's all like, it's just fascinating. Like, mm-hmm. It's such an incredible world. And it's really disturbing. And the movie, as affecting and disturbing as the movie is, the book goes even further just because you've built up the society and everything around it. But yeah, so I'm happy I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I thought it was effective without really being like totally engaging. So I guess with our scale, what should we do? And say on a scale of 1 to 5 Big Brothers, how many Big Brothers would you give this? So Brandon, we'll start with you.
I can't think of like terms that they
Or maybe you could use rats, maybe.
Yeah, rats. 1 to 5 rats.
They were actually kind of cute. So
cute. I mean, it wouldn't be that bad to have them claw your face
off.
I
had mixed feelings about them because I knew they were just little sweet
They were little
sweet rats.
Even though they were clawing and eating each other.
And I know. They were so cute.
Based on purely lack of information, I'm going to go down to a 2.75. I couldn't commit to 2.5.
Of you.
I couldn't commit down all the way to 2.5, but I think it was quite at a 3.
Gotcha.
For me.
Okay.
This is out of 5, right?
Right, out of 5.
I'm so used to being like A, B.
You can give it a grade if you want. You won't be able to rank it with Big Brothers or Rats. So if you're okay with that.
No, I'll give it a 3 just because I'm a big emotional connection person.
Uh-huh.
So and I'm eager to see if that stays the same after I read the book.
Right. I'll give it a 3 too. Like we all agree, this movie kind of shorts you on the information and coherent storytelling. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, you can get some level of enjoyment out of it, but by no means would any of us recommend seeing this movie first before reading the book. So I think check out the book and do that. But what a depressing evening. This is like the strangest, weirdest, depressing episode of Missing Frames yet.
Well, we're 1 week into a very strange presidency.
Yeah.
We've had a number of beloved celebrities die.
Yep.
And then one of them, the star of the movie that we were currently watching, dies mid-movie.
While we're watching the movie.
And the movie itself is very depressing and upsetting. So it's just,
it's like a whole combination of just fun and love and games. Well, we sincerely hope that listening to this episode has been more entertaining than us experiencing it. But I hope our pain has given you pleasure. That sounds terrible. Ugh. Maybe I'll cut that.
Go hug your loved ones.
Go hug your loved ones, please. Yes. I think we could all use a little bit of hugs and kisses right now. So we're all on Twitter. Find us on Twitter. I'm at @YayShondorman. Lindsay, where are you?
I'm at a tiny Amazon. underscores between the words.
And I am at bkendrick86.
And tell us about, if you've seen 1984, if you've read it, what are your thoughts? Book, movie, what's better, what works, what doesn't? Are there any other adaptations where you felt like they kind of missed the mark or that they exceeded their source material? Let us know. You can reach out to us on our Twitter handles, or you can reach out to at Join Nerd Party. Follow them and go ahead and check out the other Nerd Partiers shows. You can go to thenerdparty.com. And they're all great. And be sure to give us a 5-star rating, not just Missing Frames. That helps us a lot. But check out the other shows and give them ratings, too. You can give them a little bit lower. Just make sure to give Missing Frames the 5 stars, because we're awesome. We're really cool.
Don't tell the other guys.
Don't tell anyone else. Don't tell anybody. But Lindsay, Brandon, thank you so much for just being a part of this depressing experience with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And everyone, have a wonderful whatever.
April 4th, 1984.